on board the G&M Family Market phone line, we say hello to Mike Violet. Hello, Mike Violet.
Good morning. Good morning. Boy, old habits are hard to break. Good afternoon, Rich.
Nice to have you on with us. And why did it take us so long to get you on? Well, you were, because you were working mornings for all those years. And now, was this nap time for you in the afternoon? How did you do that?
You know, when the spring equinox arrives, I stop taking naps because I like to enjoy the daylight savings time that has been given to us. So I'm a heavy napper in the winter months, much like a grizzly bear. However, once we get to spring and, you know, a young man's fancy turns to love and baseball, I'm awake.
Yeah, I'm with you on both of those things, actually. And yeah, but once you do it, and I haven't done morning radio in forever, but once that's in your DNA, I find for me, I've never been able to sleep in since those days.
Oh, you know, it's been about 9 months since I gave up my gig at GAN down here. And in 9 months, I have not rectified or come to terms with the fact that I cannot sleep past 5 o'clock in the morning. It is impossible. So at least it's better than 3:15 that I used to get up at for God knows 35 years or whatever. But you know, I managed to get my sleep in one way or the other during this little hiatus that I've been on. So it's all good, Rich. It's all good.
Well, all right. Hey, let's talk a little baseball. You mentioned it, the Sox less than 2 weeks away from opening day. Are you optimistic about this team, delighted about this team, or cautious?
Delighted. I couldn't use that word. Cautious, I'd say so. What did Dick Williams say in 67? We'll win more ball games than we lose. Or something like that. That's how old I am. They're certainly, you know, going to contend. I still think even with the price situation and some question marks in the bullpen with this new kid they got from Milwaukee who apparently can't adjust himself to a throwing program or whatever. Only in Boston can that happen. But the lineup is still good enough. Look, even without David Ortiz, that lineup is still good enough, and that pitching. I don't think we can expect another 22-win season out of Rick Porcello, but I think he'll still be very good. And obviously, Sale is the real deal. I don't think there's any doubt about that, and he'll win 17, 18, 20 ball games. So, in the end, to put a cherry on it, I still think they're going to win the American League East. That's not going to be easy because Toronto's very good. Buck Showalter will have the Orioles there, but I still think. All things considered, that's a tough lineup to face on a day-to-day basis, and I think they'll be okay.
So, Mike, if they do win the East, will it be because of or in spite of John Farrell?
I knew you were going to ask me about Farrell. He's a great clubhouse guy and not necessarily a good in-game manager, and I'm sort of on board with that. But I always look at, how players play for coaches. Or managers in this case. And clearly, they play hard for the guy. Clearly, they like the guy. Clearly, they want to go out there and play hard for the guy. Is he Connie Mack in game? You know, is he Tony La Russa, who I actually don't like? But, you know, is he a skilled in-game manager? I wouldn't put him in the top 10, but I think the bottom line is when you're looking at specifically Major League Baseball managers, if players play hard for them and body language is good, that means a lot to me. And so I don't really have a problem with John Farrell. So to answer your question, will they win it in spite of him or because of him? Can I waffle on this and be a classic fence sitter and say it'll be somewhere in the middle somewhere?
Why not? We welcome that kind of thing here.
I figured you might.
You know, and you talk about managing, and I think back, I guess, was it 2 years ago, the Mets and the Royals were in the series, and watching those two managers and scratching my head thinking, I'm pretty sure my little league coach had better X's and O's than these two guys.
Yeah, two dopes right there. I mean, that wasn't the irresistible force against the immovable object. It was the resistible force against the movable object during that series. Those of us who follow sports closely, you know, managers, coaches affect games differently in different sports. There's no question about that. And, you know, over the grind of 162, even if you've got a lousy in-game manager, and of course there's a faction of people who think John Farrell's right there as being a lousy in-game manager. I'm not there. But I think because of the grind and because of the length of the season, the marathon that it is, guys, that players end up superseding all of that, and good players, good pitchers, let's face it, good pitching will get you past that, are able to overcome that. And I look, in this division, is Joe Girardi a great in-game manager? I don't think he's any better than Farrell. Certainly Buck Showalter gets all of the, all of the plaudits for being, a great in-game manager, although leaving Zach Britton out in that bullpen in that playoff game last year still haunts a lot of people. But, in the end, I just think you got good players, and they do. That's going to overcome that. And, I think Farrell, the players like him and play hard for him, and that's what counts.
We're talking with Mike Violet here on Downtown. Where are you on the Celtics? Are you caught up in this, or were you disappointed that Danny Ainge didn't make a move at the deadline?
Yeah, I frankly am. I watched them again, last night. Nice win at home against, the Wizards, a team that they're up against, and trying to battle for that second spot in the East. But I wish Danny had gone, even though last night I was actually driving back to Portland from Gardner last night. So I was listening to the ball game on the radio, and I was astounded when John Brandy said the Celtics had 17 more rebounds than the Wizards had at one point in the ballgame. And I don't know what the final numbers were, but clearly it's the biggest weakness of this team. I watched them when I got home, and I always, every game I do this, why is Amir Johnson ever in a ball game? It's like he doesn't do anything. He doesn't really take up space very well anymore. And I think Danny needed to go out and get somebody. But, I'm kind of, the way I am with Belichick, with BB, we trust him, kind of like that with Danny. Although I wish he would have gone out and gotten somebody at the deadline to take up some space and grab some rebounds. But I think he's got a plan, and obviously they're going to have, if they don't get that number one pick from the woe-begotten Brooklyn Nets, they're going to have a top three pick again. So they're going to get somebody very good. But I do think he's got to do something. There's too many bodies. The Red Claws down here can only have so many players on their roster, and they can only have so many draft picks. And eventually, you got to move them and take advantage of having all of these numbers.
Mike, you mentioned you were in Gardner. Were you part of the tribute last night to the late Don Brown?
Yeah. Yes, I was. Don was. If anybody is primarily responsible for me being in broadcasting radio, it was Don. And my friend Rob Munzing from Munzing Media put together this Facebook Live tribute last night where myself and a bunch of my talk about some old radio war horses, and I wasn't the oldest guy in the room. But when I was a kid, when I was 20 or 21 years old, I dropped out of college at the University of Maine at Augusta, and I started driving a truck for my dad, and my father's like, what are you going to do with yourself? And I wanted to get into radio. I had never, ever done it before, but I knew I wanted to do it, and I called Don. Out of the blue, Don was, at that time, was as big as it got in radio in Maine. He had a number one morning show in Gardner at WABK. And I called him, and he took my call, and he invited me to come down and watch him do his show. And that was the beginning for me. He showed me how to splice tape. He showed me how to cue up records. He showed me how to do a show properly. And so, yeah, we had a great tribute last night. And if anybody's interested in viewing it or listening to it, it's on my Facebook page and numerous others as well. Rob Kennedy, another colleague of mine, was there last night, a terrific younger broadcaster. Jimmy Walker, an old producer of ours at Time Warner Cable, when we did a ton of live local sports coverage, was there. It was really fun, and I know you. I don't know how well you knew Don, Rich. Of course, different markets and such, but he was a god to me, and the fact that I got to go and learn from the guy I thought was a god and then become a colleague of his, a co-worker of his, doing games with him. And I mentioned this during the tribute last night. When I was a kid breaking into the business, there were two people that I really looked up to. One was Don Brown, who I ended up doing a game with and doing many games with. And the other was, of course, our friend George Hale. I'll never forget when I was doing some play-by-play for Channel 5 back in the day, and they assigned George and I to do a game together. And aside from the fact that I was shaking in my boots, I get to the game, and Hale insists that I do play-by-play. And I told him, George, I cannot. do play-by-play with you. It is not right. It is not. It's, you know, I'm what, 25 years old. George was 100, I believe, at that time. 150 now. But he insisted that I do play-by-play, and I did. I somehow got through, I don't know, a Brewer-Lawrence game or whatever it was at the auditorium. And after the game, when you get praise from George Hale, I thought it was a pretty good day. So I had Don and George in that same category, and unfortunately we lost Don. And this was a real great night last night, and his service is going to be Saturday at the Calumet Club in Augusta, and I'm certainly going to go to that. But he was not only a colleague, but a dear friend and somebody that I worship the ground that he walked on. And if he wanted a hot dog, Rich, I went and got him a hot dog.
Yeah, I didn't know Don very well, but he had that unique gift that whenever I would see him, and usually it was at the Augusta Civic Center at tournament time, and he would come up and act like we were best friends and had known each other forever, and was just so warm and so open and so supportive to young broadcasters.
Yeah, there were not many people that crossed paths with Don that he didn't feel like, if he wasn't your friend, he didn't feel like it would be at all out of character, you know, to at least treat you that way. You mentioned the Civic Center, and you know, I've done a million games up there, but they have a press box up in the side of the building there that you have to crawl up this cylindrical type stairway case thing to get up to the top.
Oh, yes.
And Don and I were doing a game together. I think we were doing it on television back then on the old Channel 9 on Time Warner, or it might have been Adelphia back in those days. But as you know, Rich, neither Don or I, you wouldn't call us small men. We're more in the portly category. So we lug the equipment up to the edge of the building, and we both look up at this cylindrical stairway case thing, and Don looks at me, and my eyes meet him, and I look at him. And I go, who's going first here, me or you? He goes, you go first, because I'd rather have you fall on me than me fall on you.
Well, I've told this story about doing a game there years ago with Gary Thorne, and he wanted to leave early to get to a hockey game. And I was gullible at the time, and he said, look, when the game ends, you're down on the floor doing interviews, I'll throw it to you for the post-game interviews. You throw it to a commercial, and you'll be able to get up to the booth while the commercials are running. So I'm on the floor interviewing whatever coach it is, and Thorne's waving goodbye as he's out the door, and I go to commercial, and then I realize, yeah, I can make it up there in 2 minutes' time, but I have no breath. So we came back from a commercial, and I was huffing and puffing like a 107-year-old man. Curses, Thorne.
Yeah, you could not do that in that building. And I've had moments like that too, but at that place specifically, getting up from the floor and getting up to the booth, there's no elevator there. You're on your own.
And, exactly.
I was out of breath. Believe me, Rich.
Well, Mike, it's great to talk with you. Thanks so much for coming on the show this afternoon. Oh. Let's do it again soon. What do you say?
Hey, thanks, guys, for asking me. My pleasure. I'm a huge fan of the show. I listen to you guys. Thank God for the internets and the ability to be able to stream you guys. I love what you guys do up there. I wish we had something like this. We got to get you an outlet down here in the big city.
We'll let you in on a cut if you can work that out.
I'll work on it right now.
All right. Hey, thanks, Mike. We'll talk with you again soon.